and listen for the sound of hoofbeats on the ice.
Did you hear them talking about it on the radio? Did you try to read the writing on the wall? Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again. Day by day, I hear the voices rising. Started with a whisper like it did before. Day by day, we count the dead and dying, ship those bodies home while the networks all keep score. Did you hear 'em talking about it on the radio? Could your eyes believe the writing on the wall? Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again. One by one, I see the old ghost rising, stumbling across big muddy where the light gets dim. Day after day, another mama's crying. She's lost her precious child to a war that has no end. Did you hear 'em talking about it on the radio? Did you stop to read the writing on the wall? Did that voice inside you say, I've seen this all before? It's like deja vu all over again. It's like deja vu all over again. It's the 19th of March, and that means it's the anniversary of another day that will live on in infamy. In this day, in 2003, the United States launched Operation Iraqi Destruction. Operation Iraqi Freedom. Sorry, one of those little mental aberrations. Freedom, not destruction, not invasion, not get the oil, not I did it when you couldn't, Daddy. Not I've got better guns than the ones I sold you. Nah, 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 nah. Freedom, that's it. Because that's what we do in America. We bring freedom to the world, whether they like it or not. They're free to worship us and buy our stuff. They are so free now. And so are we. I'm Chuck Gregory, and this is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we're streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's a listener-supported radio station, so we hope you'll stop on by to freedomslips.com and send them a donation, buy one of their little products. Like, how about a DVD or CD or whatever of all of our shows for last year? Well, that'd be fun. But they have a lot of other great things, too, and they put on a lot of great shows. Check them out. Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. I'm proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Tonight we welcome special guests Anthony Rayson, Larry Pinkney, M.K. Davis, and Phil Ferruggio. And so tonight we are joining together for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, Duluth, Port Orange, Benton, Mississippi, Minneapolis, Chicago, and wherever you are. Want to mention a couple of Jim Fetzer articles on Veterans Today, one on the Boston bombing. One is the Boston Show Trial, and one is the New York Times, All the Lies They Can Fit in Print. Jim Fetzer on Veterans Today. And here in northern Minnesota, there is this guy starting his own church. There's always somebody starting their own church, usually a young blonde couple with young blonde children. You can see by the metal building with the fresh new painting of the rainbow with the parking lot full of minivans with the skid marks pointing toward the casino. Well, this one was a bit different. It was a table in the woods, Bob's church, Bobbicism. They meet, talk, tell some jokes, say some prayers, pass around the bread. The poor, the rich, taxes, military, women, animals, trees, they talk about all of that. And they actually think God takes them seriously, even though, well, you know, they are just them. Bob's church, the church of Bob. And there's this guy starting his own country. You've probably heard him. Maybe you've met him. Maybe he's your brother. But anyway, he's been going all over the country for years and years saying, if I were president, taxes, the poor, the military, health care, if I were president, he says, and this is how he's going to do it. We wish him well. Maybe he will meet up with Bob someday. And now it's time for Meet the Press. So, Senator Snuffleupagus, Oscar, Big Bert, Kermit, Bert, Grover, the Count, Maria's Bosom, the CIA, your thoughts. Many people still think of the CIA as an agency designed to help American presidents make informed decisions about matters outside the United States. That was the basis for President Truman signing the legislation which created the agency, and indeed, it does serve that role, generally rather inadequately, but it has become something far beyond that. Yes, its charter forbids operations in the U.S., but those restrictions have been ignored or bent countless times, both in secret programs like Echelon, monitoring telephone communications by five English-speaking allies who then share the information obtained, or forerunner to the NSA's recently revealed collection of computer data and years of mail opening inside the United States. The 1975 Church Senate Committee looked into earlier illegality came into being because a number of sources were suggesting the CIA had engaged in assassination and other dark practices, matters which at that time quite upset the general public and some decent politicians. The names in rumors included Lumumba of Congo, Trujillo of the Dominican Republic, Diem of Vietnam, Schneider of Chile, and others. But since only part of the church report was released, we cannot know the full extent of what had been going on. Another possible name is Dag Hammarskjöld of the UN, is perhaps a key measure of how far things have deteriorated with the CIA that the church committee today appears almost naive. The CIA, of course, now runs a regular assassination air force, which has killed thousands of innocent people apart from the intended targets. Themselves individuals proved guilty of nothing under law. The CIA today thinks nothing of using mass killing to reach desired goals, the maiden shootings of innocent people, demonstrating in Kiev being an outstanding example, shootings which precipitated a coup last year in Ukraine against an elected government. And then there are the trained and armed maniacs which were set loose upon the people of Syria to do pretty much whatever they pleased. George H.W. Bush Sr., the man for whom the Langley headquarters is named, was more than a short-term appointed CIA director. He had a long but never acknowledged background in CIA, a fact which has come to light from a few references and obscure documents obtained by assassination researchers over decades. He was likely America's first official CIA president. Of course, George Bush Jr. was not CIA, lacking the fundamental requirement of a decent brain. But his presidency was effectively America's first dual presidency, with Dick Cheney serving as senior partner despite his lesser title. And Dick Cheney was CIA connected, having served as Secretary of Defense under George Bush's father, overseeing such operations as Desert Storm, and after George H.W.'s election defeat, serving as chairman and CEO of Halliburton, a gigantic oil services company which operates all over the globe. Such companies, in much the same fashion as large American news organizations such as Time Life, CBS, or the New York Times, notoriously all well connected with the CIA. The Bush-Cheney period was certainly a golden one for the CIA in terms of institutional growth and new projects. Many ugly projects now making our world a less secure place were started in this period. The CIA now is so firmly entrenched and so immensely well-financed, much of it off the books, including everything from a secret budget items to peddling drugs and weapons. That is all but impossible for a president to oppose it the way Kennedy did. Obama, who has proved himself a fairly weak character from the start, certainly has given the CIA anything it wants. The dirty business of ISIS in Syria and Iraq is one project. The coup in Ukraine is another. The pushing of NATO's face right against Russia's borders is still another. Several attempted coups in Venezuela are still more, and the creation of a drone air force for extrajudicial killing in half a dozen countries is yet another. They don't resemble projects we would expect from a smiley-faced, intelligent man who sometimes wore sandals and refused to wear a flag pin on his lapel during his first election campaign. More than one observer has speculated about Obama's being CIA, and there are significant holes in his resume which could be accounted for by his involvement. He would have been an attractive candidate for several reasons. Obama is bright, and the CIA employs few blacks in its important jobs. He also might have been viewed as a good political prospect for the future in just the way foreign politicians are selected for secret pensions. After all, before he was elected, there were stories about people meeting this smart and superficially charming man remarking that they may just have met a future president. If Obama is not actually CIA, then he is so intimidated that he pretty much rubber stamps their projects. A young, inexperienced president must always be mindful of that other young president whose head was half blown off in the streets of Dallas. Moreover, there are some shady areas in Obama's background around drugs and perhaps other matters which could be politically compromising. The CIA is perfectly capable of using anything of that nature for political exposure while making it look as though it came from elsewhere. So when people write of America's secret government or of its government within the government, it is far more than an exaggeration. It is actually hard to imagine that now any possibility of someone's being elected president and opposing what the CIA recommends, the presidency having come to resemble in more than superficial ways the monarchy in Britain. The Queen is kept informed of what her government is doing, but can do nothing herself to change directions. Yes, the president still has the power on paper to oppose any scheme, and then so does this Queen simply by refusing her signature, but she likely could exercise that power just once. In her case, the consequence could be an abrupt end to the monarchy. In a president's case, it would be either a Nixonian or a Kennedy-esque end. And only because you asked, Big Bird is an underachiever, in my opinion. Thank you, Senator Snuffleupagus. This has been Meet the Press.
And now, we join another episode of another Wisconsin Daytime Drama sponsored by the Wisconsin Arts Council. They want to remind you to write to the governor's office to join the fight to make blaze orange and camo the official state flag. And now, straight out of Kenosha, we join the program with Curly in the bar talking to himself into the big mirror or something. Faced with working class life, I see only one solution, beer. So I sit here at Burt's Tavern watching Fat Pootie in a t-shirt that reads, 1 million battered women in this country and I've been eating mine plain. That this is not considered especially offensive says all you need to know about culture and gender sensitivity around here. And the fact that Pootie boats, owns guns, and is allowed to purchase hard liquor is something we should all probably be afraid to contemplate. Thankfully, even cheap American beer is a palliative for anxious thought tonight. Then, too, beer is educational and stimulates contemplation. I call it my learning through drinking program. Learning through drinking is never dull. But when karaoke came to American bars, my hopsy approach to social studies got downright entertaining, especially here, where some participants get gussied up for their 3 weekly minutes of stardom. Take Dink Lamp over there in the corner, presently dressed like a stubble-faced Waylon Jennings. At age, Dink's undying claim to fame in this town is not his Waylon imitation, however, which sucks. As to his Keith Whitley and his Travis Tritt. It is that he beat up the boxing chimpanzee at the carnival in 1963. This is a damn hard thing to do because chimpanzees are several times stronger than humans and capable of enough rage that the pugilistic primate wore a steel muzzle. Every good old boy in this place swears Dink pounded that chimpanzee so hard it climbed up the cage bars and refused to come back down, and that Dink won $100. I don't know. I wasn't there to see it because my good Christian family did not approve of attending such spectacles. One thing's for sure, though, Dink is tough enough to have done it. To those who wonder whether people really have names such as Dink and Booty, hell yes. Not only do we have a Dink and a Booty in our town, we also have folks named Gator, Fido, Snooky, and Tumbug, whom we simply call Bug. Anyway, with this older crowd of carryoxters from America's busted up laboring lumpin', you can count on at least one version of Good-Hearted Woman or a rendition of Coal Miner's Daughter, performed with little skill but a lot of beery heart and feeling. When it comes to heart and feeling, the best in town is a woman named Dottie. Dot is 59 years old, weighs almost 300 pounds, and sings Patsy Cline nearly as well as Patsy sings Patsy. Dot can sing Crazy and any other Patsy song ever recorded, and a few that went unrecorded. She knows Patsy's unrecorded songs because she knew Patsy personally, as did many other people still living here where Patsy Cline grew up. We know things such as the way she was treated by the town's establishment, was called a drunken whore and worse, was snubbed and reviled during her life at every opportunity, and is still sniffed at by the town's business and political classes. But Patsy took crap from no one and knew cuss words that would make a Comanche blush. And, well, she was one of us. Tough and profane. Cussing is a form of punctuation to us. Patsy grew up on our side of the tracks and suffered all the insults life still inflicts on working people here. Hers was a hard life. Dot's life has been every bit as hard as Patsy's. I think we should cut to MK.
Our first guest of the evening is MK Davis. MK Davis comes to us each week, each month, from Benton, Mississippi. MK is a Bigfoot researcher, among other things, and MK will be relating some Bigfoot lore, some Bigfoot research, or some Bigfoot knowledge. And Chuck will be getting MK on the phone. Right about one thing you can.
Hello.
Well, hello. This is Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachek and the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Okay. Well, I'd like to kick off this particular episode with a little Bigfoot discussion. We got a couple of topics I'm going to tackle, as a matter of fact. First one will be about Bigfoot. You know, in the world of Bigfoot, there's usually not a lot going on. But 2015 holds promise that it might be a bit more active and perhaps more meaningful at that. The perennially popular show Survivor Man plans to do some investing in the subject with the Survivor Man himself, Les Stroud, bringing some of his skills to the table in a quest to find Bigfoot. Now, I've been a follower of the show for quite a number of years now, and if I have Mr. Stroud pegged right, I think that he will call it like he sees it. Seems to be a very straightforward and honest person, and the format of his show, you know, literally requires that you know, everything be on the up and up in order for him to survive. So when he tackles this, the Bigfoot phenomenon, he's going to apply those same skills, those survival skills, I'm very interested to see how that turns out. What will he find? Will it be different, or will he be perhaps more successful than the throng of other investigators out there? Now, there's always an element of risk for a show like that and its producers when they change the format. And especially when they change it to something crypto. So they have to tweak it quite a bit to incorporate, you know, that type of dichotomy. I sincerely hope that this works for Mr. Stroud and his people. And I do hope that in the process, you know, of his investigation, that he does consider the Patterson Bigfoot film, and it gets some favorable attention. You know, the Discovery Channel and the Discovery Network channels has been known to bring groundbreaking television to the masses, and I'm hoping that this is no exception. I'm hoping for objectivity. I believe that Mr. Stroud will deliver that. And besides the Survivor Man show, there's also a book that's coming out by DNA expert Brian Sykes from the UK. And the title of the book is called The Nature of the Beast. And Mr. Sykes has done a study of samples from all over the world, hair and the like, that is alleged to be from the Bigfoot. So we're going to hope that he gets, comes to a conclusion, you know, that's something a little more firm than what we have been used to in the past. Now, with that being said, and we'll move over to the second subject of the discussion, and it's not crypto, but it's something that's mysterious, and that's the crash at Roswell, New Mexico, by an alleged flying saucer. And, you know, in 1947 in particular, you know, there was a newspaper article that stated that the Army had in its possession a flying saucer, that it had crashed in the desert of New Mexico. And then they took it back and said it was a weather balloon. Well, if you look into it, it's kind of obvious that something did indeed crash there. And there's very little doubt that the government went through great lengths to cover it up through misdirection. And it's also clear that the government was uncertain about what to do with the crash and its materials, and they went from being forthright about it to a series of vacillations about a weather balloon to the current explanation of it being high-altitude surveillance of nuclear activity around the globe. So what is it, or should I say, which is it? The government says it's a saucer, and believe us. Then they take that back, and they say it's a weather balloon. Now we want you to believe us again. Then they say it's a high-altitude surveillance balloon. Believe us again, a third time. So after a while, you get a little jaded. Now, Annie Jacobson, in her book Area 51, said that the craft had come from Russia. Mrs. Jacobson had rare access to some of the workers and principals that were at Area 51 and that knew about the Roswell crash. Her information was that the craft had actually been tracked entering the country from the north. She said that it would go from a very high speed to a hovering in an instant and then back to high speed again. She said that it seemed to be out of control and was making its way at a blindly high-speed meander across the country from north to south until it was finally shot down near Roswell, and that would be by the United States government. The craft was of a technology not ever seen before in this country. What disturbed the U.S. the most was that there was Russian writing in the craft, according to Ms. Jacobson. She was of the opinion that the craft did originate with the Russians, but was not of Russian technology. It appeared that the Russians had acquired the craft through some means and was not fully competent to fly it or devise a way to fly it. They could get it to fly and get it aloft, but it pretty much flew itself in the direction that it took off. Now, what was this strange craft? You know, even more startling was the fact that there were bodies aboard the craft when it was shot down. These bodies were human-like, but did not appear to be human when looked at closely. Annie Jacobson theorized that the bodies were surgically altered children made to ride the craft into the U.S. to cause mass hysteria by their bizarre appearance. This explanation appears to be an attempt to explain these bodies through the filter of the Cold War. It's clear that the U.S. was very shook up by the appearance of this craft, and especially by the Russian writing in it. It launched the struggle or race for technology that was the signature of the Cold War. And it launched a legend. The Roswell incident began a process of legendizing that is still occurring today. One of the evidences that finds its way into people's living rooms through the plethora of documentaries and dramatizations is that little coffins were requested of the local funeral home for the little bodies of the aliens. You know, I won't argue about whether the bodies were surgically altered children or that of small aliens. What I will argue about is the need to have custom-fitted coffins made for aliens that were deceased. There was simply no need for such coffins. A regular-sized coffin would have sufficed. To go and have custom coffins made would be to invite attention and provide sustenance to the legend-building process. If you want to keep a secret, you don't do that. If you have alien bodies, they are probably not going to be buried at all. If they were to be buried, their coffins would not be an issue. Do I believe that there were bodies in the Roswell crash? Well, yes, I do. And this is why. This is because of the testimony of Lieutenant Colonel Philip Corso. Lieutenant Colonel Corso held high-level positions of responsibility. At one time, was on the national security staff of President Dwight Eisenhower. He knew a lot about security and intelligence. Lieutenant Colonel Corso said that he saw the bodies in a hangar at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and that they were in makeshift boxes or coffins, if you will. Now, what do you suppose that the alien bodies were doing at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in a hangar there? Wright-Patterson Air Force Base is in Ohio. That's a long ways from Roswell, New Mexico. Does that sound like they had any intention of burying the little bodies? My guess is that they were on the way for some kind of dissection or study, which could not be done on the ground at Roswell. Interestingly enough, Lieutenant Colonel Corso was asked out of retirement to determine whether there were two Lee Harvey Oswalds operating at the same time before the Kennedy assassination, which Lieutenant Colonel Corso was able to do using intelligence contacts he knew, so he was still respected for his intelligence gathering abilities even beyond his retirement. In other words, this guy was no slouch when it came to gathering intelligence, and he was kind of the go-to guy. And he wrote a book, and in his book, it was called The Day After Roswell, and in that book, Lieutenant Colonel Corso says that many of the high-tech gadgetry that we take for granted was developed in a retro engineering style from the Roswell craft that crashed or was shot down in 1947. From lasers to fiber optics to transistors and high-tech guidance systems for aircraft were developed from this strange craft. If that is the case, then we owe a debt of gratitude to aliens or surgically altered children or what have you. It's hard to determine exactly what happened out there in the desert of New Mexico. There has been so...
MK, we thank you very much for being on the show again, and we'll talk to you next month.
Appreciate it.
And now we continue straight out of Kenosha. Dot's life has been every bit as hard as Patsy's. Harder, really. Because Dot has lived twice as long as Patsy Cline managed to. And she looks it. By the time my people hit 60, we look like a bunch of hypertensive red-faced toads in a phlegm coughing contest. Fact is, we're even unhealthier than we look. Doctors tell us we have blood in our cholesterol. And the cops tell us there's alcohol in that blood. True to our class, Dottie is disabled by heart trouble, diabetes, and several other diseases. Her blood pressure is so high, the doctor thought the pressure device was broken. And she's slowly going blind to boot. Trouble is, insurance costs her as much as rent. Her old man makes $8 an hour washing cars at a dealership, and if everything goes just right, they have about $55 a week left for groceries, gas, and everything else. But if an extra expense as small as $30 comes in, they compensate by not filling one of Dot's prescriptions, or two or three of them, and in which case she gets sicker and sicker until they can afford the copay to refill the prescriptions again. At 59, these repeated lapses into vessel-popping high blood pressure and diabetic surges pretty much guarantee she won't collect Social Security for long, after she reaches 62, if she reaches 62, one of these days, it'll truly be over when the fat lady sings. Join us next week for another Wisconsin daytime drama straight out of Kenosha, sponsored by Cheesehead Earbuds, Beverly's Big Bratwurst, and Lake Wissota Mulch Beer.
Edward Snowden and Julian Assange tell us there is nothing to the obvious 9/11 U.S. government-Israeli conspiracy, which has led to all of these wars and changes in the U.S. and the world, bringing us to the brink of world war. Truth or dare? Dare? Deal or no deal? Who are you guys, really? Are you CIA, FBI? If you can't tell us the truth about 9/11, if you are only going to tell us about government surveillance that we already knew about, then who are you and who do, excuse me, then you are not who you say you are. Are you? Truth or dare? We dare you to expose the truth about 9/11. Deal or no deal? And now we bring you the Bill Hicks Target and Walmart April Fool's Card Special American Collection. Tell those Americans around you what you really think of them. A card designed with you in mind. Some sample selections from the Bill Hicks Target and Walmart April Fool's Day Card Special American Collection.
It's all about money, not freedom, y'all, okay? Nothing to do with freedom. If you think you're free, try going somewhere without effing money, okay?
Go back to bed, America. Your government has figured out how it all transpired. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control again. Here's American Gladiators. Watch this. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Here is American Gladiators. Here's 56 channels of it. Watch these pituitary retards bang their effing skulls together and congratulate you on living in the land of freedom. Here you go, America. You are free to do as we tell you. You are free to do what we tell you.
I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding out both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control. Here's Love Connection. Watch this and get fat and stupid.
The world is like a ride in an amusement park. When you choose to go on it, you think it's real because that's how powerful our minds are. The ride goes up and down, around and around. It has thrills and chills. It's very brightly colored, and it's very loud, and it's fun for a while. Many people have been on the ride a long time, and they begin to wonder, hey, is this real or is this just a ride? And other people have remembered, and they come back to us and say, hey, don't worry, don't be afraid ever. Because this is just a ride, and we kill those people. Shut him up. I've got a lot invested in this ride. Shut him up. Look at my furrows of worry. Look at my big bank account in my family. This has to be real. It's just a ride. But we always kill the good guys who try and tell us that. You ever notice that? And let the demons run amok. But it doesn't matter because it's just a ride, and we can change it any time we want. It's only a choice. No effort, no work, no job, no savings of money, just a simple choice right now between fear and love. The eyes of fear want you to put bigger locks on your doors, buy guns, close yourself off. The eyes of love instead see all of us as one. Here's what we can do to change the world right now to a better ride. Take all that money we spend on weapons and defenses each year and instead spend it feeding and clothing and educating the poor of the world, which it would pay for many times over. Not one human being excluded. And we could explore space together, both inner and outer, forever in peace.
The Bill Hicks Target and Walmart April Fool's Day Card Special American Collection. A card designed with you in mind. Funding for tonight's program is provided in part by GoBarbaraBush.com, as well as the United States Navy, a global force for good. The United States Army, be all you can be. The United States Air Force, peace is our profession. And the United States Marines, the few, the proud, the brave. Because we could never sell you the truth. The mind of an American rules the world. The president? Warren Buffett? Tiger Woods? Katie Couric? John Stewart? The Michelin Man? No, stupid. It's you. You are king of the world. God, Superman, King Midas, all that. It's you. You are more than just a legend in your own mind. You are the man. And when the CIA, through the CIA propaganda machine called Radio Free Europe or the American Free Press, tells you the Russians are coming or the criminals are coming or terrorists or the Iranians or Iraqis or Afghans on nuclear-powered blue donkeys or big bees, and you believe it, well then, Zeke, that's how the world will go. You are powerful. The most powerful Yahoo who has ever lived in the history of living. And you are an idiot. And the world is going to burn. You are not an idiot on purpose, but an idiot nonetheless. The CIA, the persons in the CIA are smart, but they are evil. The actual evil empire. And they control you. The most powerful person in the world. If you were not an idiot, they could not do that. But you are an idiot. And that's a bummer, man. That's a bummer.
The moon. We went there and never went back. Makes sense. The same thing happened with the big discovery of Hawaii and Las Vegas and Old Faithful. And no problem in getting back from the surface of the moon to the main spaceship thing and the technology. You mean we could do that in the 60s when computers were as big as rooms and there was no such thing as personal computers, the internet, and we never went back? And hey, wait, look over me. Hey, where's your warrant, man? There's a beverage here, man. I got my rights. I'm going to the library. I'm doing a paper. Freaking hall monitors think they own the stupid school. And that press conference, wow, Buzz Aldrin, Neil Armstrong, Michael Collins, they should have been like, man, we are so excited to just get back from the moon. We had never tested that moon landing thing, and then the takeoff from the moon, and then the hookup with the orbiter thing, because how could you practice that? And it all worked like a charm. I'm going to live, and I've been through like the moon, man. But they were like, we are so depressed and so shy, and we did not see stars or not. Yes, no, yes, I don't know. It's like almost like they were hiding something. Hey, let go of me. I left my pants and my other pants. I told you, man. Goddamn fascists.
This PSA message brought to you by the DEA, the prison construction industry, and your local and federal politicians since who knows when. Thanks, Jesus. Thanks, Buddha. Thanks, Allah. Thanks, Alan the Alien, for the drug wars. How long has it been? Since Bush Sr. in the mid-80s? Since Reagan, and followed up faithfully by Clinton and more Bush? And really all your neighbors and church council members as well, huh? Locking human beings into cages for 10, 20, 30 years, making their children cry their way into adulthood alone. That's us. We are everyone who ever worked to bring you the drug war. Hey, can we talk now? It wasn't about criminals. No, really. I'm not joking. Dude. Look at the bankers and all those who got us into war by lies. Those who made money on killing. And look at the billions of dollars alcohol industry. All that stuff is not illegal, but marijuana is a natural growing plant. And we made it illegal. Pretty cool, huh? Awesome, dude. So here's to you. Thank you for watching television and playing miniature golf and protecting the world from white-tailed deer. For all you do, this bud's for you. And this message brought to you by your local county jail. Give us your tired, huddled masses yearning to be free. And we'll lock them up. Put them in a small, dirty, old, crowded, out-of-the-way county jail. Tens of thousands of them throughout the United States. More than McDonald's. And we do it our way. you've got poor people or some who came from somewhere else. If they're stupid enough to think the Statue of Liberty is holding up a torch and not a middle finger, send them to us. We'll teach them about America. We'll stick it to them our way. We're your local county jail. We're not the Holiday Inn. We are not Mother Teresa. We are not a country club. This is jail, and we get paid to work here. And then we can buy beer at the good old Homeland Tavern on our way home with our money and try to forget. God bless America and your local county jail and beer.
He's a cool dude who smokes and drinks on the sly and plays basketball with the other dudes, all in three-piece suits, and still they are so cool. Nobody knows where he's from, but they were so glad when he got here. Now they're wondering if he'll ever leave. He's one of those guys. His first job out of college was with the CIA. Do you ever leave the CIA? Just saying. He's complicit in the 9/11 attacks and bombing and killing and locking people away in prison forever. But when he talks to big groups, he talks like he's one of us, the best, brightest, hippest, coolest dude in the room. When he drinks, he doesn't always drink beer. But when he comes into my place and orders a beer, a tall, dark, cool beer, he also drinks dos D's, my spit and my urine. He's the most powerful, hippest, coolest dude in the world. Stay thirsty, my friend. And now our next guest of the evening is Anthony Racen. Anthony Racen comes to us each month from Chicago. Anthony is a former, he's a retired toll booth operator on the Chicago freeways. And he is a, he's a publisher, he's a writer. He, for years and years, he has corresponded with prisoners. And what he does is he gets those poems and stories that he gets from them, and he publishes them in zines. And you can find a collection of those zines at DePaul University online. Just go to Anthony Racen, DePaul University. And Chuck is going to get Anthony on the phone just right about now. And oftentimes, Anthony will have some writing from a prisoner that he has been corresponding with.
Hello.
Hello, Anthony. It's Chuck and Mike in the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
All righty. Well, good to talk to y'all. Tonight I want to read from an extraordinary woman prisoner in Indiana. Her name is Anastasia Schmid. It's A-N-A-S-T-A-Z-I-A Schmid, S-C-H-M-I-D. She wrote a letter last month to me. I'll read that letter and a recent letter and possibly a little bit of a study she did that time. Okay, ABC, let me begin by expressing my gratitude for the copies of your 2015 catalog on the Inside Books Project Resource Guide and Lee Savage's work writing Asylum of the Mind. If you are in contact with her, please share my appreciation for her tenacious spirit, persisting, persevering, and rising above such atrocities. I understand all too well. I was chemically restrained on 15 different antipsychotic meds, a.k.a. legal zombie dope, and placed on trial in that state. I've been incarcerated 14 years. My trial was a little over 12 years ago. I've never stopped my pursuit of justice, no easy battle against such blatant corruptions. I'm happy to say I've managed to cross the threshold into the federal courts. My appeal on habeas currently pens before the 7th District Court, a monumental feat for a woman in the state of Indiana. To my knowledge, I'm the first here to do so. I have long since felt this fight is not for myself alone, and so I too continue against all odds. Someone once said that the people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do. So wherever Lee may be, she has a sister in solidarity here in Indiana. I've contacted Lee Savage. She's working at a homeless shelter in Gainesville, Florida now. On another note, there are so many of your publications I would like to have, but I'm indigent. I'm currently on a research team that's collectively writing a book on the history of women's prison and the first 15 years of IWP, the Indiana Women's Prison. My particular segment is on mental illness, generally a farce created by doctor unto patient, no less different today than in the 19th century, and sexuality. Would be happy to share my work with you. I have presented my work at Indiana's Historical Association's conference last March, and again at the Indiana Academy of Social Sciences last October. My papers are pending publication in several academic journals, interviewed with the online publication Slate, slate.com this afternoon, about the work I and my academic colleagues are doing. We are indeed rewriting history as we are making history with the work we're doing. I am attempting to create a new face for women inmates in the continued perils inflicted upon them by the white hetero patriarchy. A face with a voice attached to a beautiful drug-free mind. Over the years, organizations like yours have helped me expand my knowledge base and continue my education through the materials provided. For that, I am eternally grateful. I share my words, knowledge, and art as a way of giving back. You are welcome to share my words, yet I cannot correspond with others incarcerated. Therefore, only non-inmates may write. I'm listing the numbers of your publications I'd most like to have. I leave it at your discretion. I can only send a SASE this time. An infinite love and gratitude for all you do. So I sent her a bunch of more publications, and she wrote again on the 12th of March. Anthony, greetings, recalcitrant brother. I trust all is well with you. I wanted to extend my gratitude for the literature you've sent. Especially enjoyed and plan on doing citing in my recent work the pieces by Cheryl Clark and Audre Lorde. The others were also very helpful, and your work is nothing short of inspiring. Your Slaughterhouse piece is so mimic of my own past writing and current beliefs. I always share every book, paper, zine, etc. I receive. Many are being enlightened by the gifts of words I receive. As promised, I'm enclosing a copy of my historical academic work for you to add to the collection. There are several versions of my work as I have presented it at several conferences. It is on its way to academic publication. Eventually, this work, which is being expanded, will be part of a collectively written book we have been in the process of researching and writing for the past 12 years and hope to complete this year. I'm currently working on the modern end of this spectrum and will likewise share that piece when it's complete. That piece is my current graduate studies course project I need to complete by the first week of May, so expect that piece out or before then. So much of the past spills into the future, often because so many of the history's atrocities have remained hidden. But isn't it always the secrets that are the most damaging to us in life? I have been incarcerated for 14 years now, charged erroneously and wrongfully with murder. My victim was my psychotic boyfriend, textbook sociopath, abuser in every sense of the word. His reign of terror lasted 3 years. Physical, verbal, sexual, mental, emotional, psychological abuse, abuse of my pets, family, and friends. The icing on the cake of horrors was his sexual molestation of my then 6-year-old special needs daughter. I have since learned he held a long record of physically and sexually abusing women and young girls, though out of intense fear of him, the others did not go to the police. I have documentation and innumerable witnesses to what and others endured. My crime was unplanned and unintended and occurred during a psychotic break due to my PTSD over years of abuse by his hand. My mental state progressively worsened afterward. I turned myself in and was incarcerated the same night after the wounds he had inflicted on my body that night were treated at the emergency room. I was found incompetent to stand trial and shipped off to a state psych hospital where I spent several months being pumped full of hardcore dope, chemically restrained, 15 psych meds later. I went to trial 10 months after the hospital shipped me back to the jail, still on all that dope, completely oblivious to what was happening to me. The system denied me everything that may have provided me a defense. None of the past abuse came out in trial, and I, along with most of my witnesses, were not allowed to testify, including a cop who had previously busted him for animal cruelty. By the time I was sent to prison for 50 years I'd been sentenced to, I was literally on my deathbed from toxic levels of drug poisoning in my system overall, the dope they kept me on for so long. It took me years to regain my health and mind, but I have indeed achieved what they said couldn't be done. I have been completely medication-free for well over 8 years. Now I no longer have a psych code or the need for any doctor. Actually, today I'm a counselor and a healer to others. It took me 13 years to obtain my own legal documentation. Once I did, I became even more appalled by the injustices in my case and took matters into my own hands. As I have previously told you, my case currently pends in the 7th District Federal Court of Appeals, and a team of lawyers in the Mayor Brown Law Firm, Chicago and Texas, are currently defending me. Yet I have long since learned not to fully rely on any attorney, so if you happen to have any info or contact reference for materials or people who would like to assist me, I'm greatly appreciative of it. You may share my info. Breaking silence sets us free in more ways than one. Anyway, that's the nutshell version of it. I'm always willing to share more. Enjoy the quid pro quo and do share your thoughts on my work. I look forward to hearing from you again soon. So I know you've received my work. As always, your sister in solidarity. And she sent me this remarkable 12-piece piece. It's titled, The Most Virtuous Vagina in the United States of America. Captive patients, female slaves, and prisoners in 19th century America. And she talks about this doctor. I'll read a little bit of a few paragraphs here. Dr. Theophilus Parvin IV, one of the preeminent physicians in the United States in the postbellum period, was the sole doctor at the Indiana Women's Prison for the first 10 years of its existence. His tenure sheds intriguing light on treatment of the women and girls at the prison and on attitudes toward women and sexuality during that period. Gynecology was in its infancy at that time. To understand the role that Dr. Parvin played in the history of gynecology and of women's prisons, we need to start with a different physician, Dr. Marion Sims. Medical historians recognize Sims as the father of gynecology in the U.S. At the time of his death in 1883, the same year Dr. Parvin left IWP, he was eulogized as one of the three greatest men in American history. Yet Sims became a pioneer in female medical science and practice only through relentless exploration of the female sexual anatomy of black female slaves and the horrifically painful experimental surgeries he conducted on them without anesthesia. These were slave women he purchased specifically for this purpose and housed them in a makeshift prison-esque building in his yard. He recorded 30 experimental operations on one of those slave women known only as Anarcha, no fewer than 30 times.
Anthony, I'm afraid we're out of time. Thank you once again.
Okay. Well, if anyone wants a copy of this, they can get it from me. I've already turned it into a zine in my distro. All right, take care.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
And now, from Port Orange, Florida, with stops at Information Clearinghouse, Dandelion Salad, Nation of Change, World News Trust, and many others, here is Phil Ferrugio with It's the Empire, Stupid!
Good evening, working stiffs. Today marks the 12th anniversary of one of the most heinous acts of foreign policy decisions by our nation since the Vietnam debacle. It's very sad. Anyway, this is from a column of mine posted on a few sites years ago at the video store. You remember when we still had to go to the local video store to rent our movies, right? Well, seems like an eternity. Well, this writer remembers well one incident engraved in my memory forever from one afternoon back in late 2002. I was at the video store rapping with my friend Kenny the manager. Now, Kenny the manager was a nice and pleasant guy despite his conservative views, but he enjoyed reading my columns, even if he disagreed with many of my opinions. Yet when it came to the upcoming war on Iraq that the administration and the media was trumpeting, Kenny was on my side on that one. He said, we need to mind our own business, especially in places around the world where those regimes take our money and don't care a diddly swat about us. Kenny and I both knew, perhaps for differing reasons, that any invasion of Iraq would be a terrible mistake, both fiscally and morally. Suddenly, as if out of nowhere, a young mother on the line with not one but two swinging kids from her arms shouts, he's got it now. We cannot wait any longer. He has the uranium. He's a danger. I looked at Kenny, who already was assuring her it was up to the people of Iraq and not us to take him out. She couldn't wait to cut him off. He can make the big one pretty soon. He's got to go before he uses it. I asked her why this guy Hussein, or Saddam, as the Bush twins always referred to him, if in fact he even had the bomb, why would he risk losing his power, his country, and most importantly, his life? Why would he use this bomb as a preemptive strike? Sound familiar, Georgie Jr.? When it would be the last thing he would do while still alive. I concluded that men like him want to live as much as the next guy, or despot, especially since they live so well. They would all like to die of old age in a nice warm bed with their power under their pillow, not to go up in flames just to say, gotcha, first. I intimated that the only way this clown would use any such weapon was if he was cornered like a rat. The mother of two swinging kids with movies in hand was now leaving, but she sent out one last salvo. You're crazy to trust this madman. I tried to answer her about who was the greater madman, but she was already climbing aboard her giant Land Cruiser with, and I kid you not, license plates that said, support education. Honestly. Anyway, I wanted to tell her that even a portion of the couple of $1 trillion about to be wasted on invading Iraq could go pretty far in supporting education, as well as better health care for her and her swinging kids. It was too late as she was off into the heavy Friday traffic getting her 12 miles per gallon. I guess this war with Iraq would go a long way for her. Maybe occupying Iraq would release more oil and lower gas prices for her and her husband. We now know that that did not happen. Finally, I stood there and scratched my head in wonder. I told Kenny, it is so easy for us to send troops into war like we did in the 60s when some of my schoolmates came home in body bags. It is so easy to send some other mother's son to fight and die. What if this lady's boys were 18 and 19 instead of 5 and 6, and we had a draft in place? I wondered how gung-ho this mom would be then. Perhaps she would load her boys into that Land Cruiser and gas guzzle it off to Canada. That is something for us all to consider. Before our citizens sign off and give our president the power to wage war without a congressional declaration, we need to investigate all the facts and all the options, and not just disinformation and half-truths. You hear that, mother in war? Thank you, and good night.
I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. Hello, everyone. Now for your local Earth news. This is Chuck Gregory and Mike Polacek with a review of today's news from the eye of the hurricane and the eye of the blizzard.
Senator James Inhofe, Republican of Oklahoma since 1994, took to the floor of the Senate the other day with a snowball in a bag because it was cold in Washington, D.C., he said, because there was snow on the ground. That proves climate change is a hoax. In case we had forgotten, he said, pulling the snowball from the sack, because we keep hearing that 2014 has been the warmest year on record. I asked the chair, do you know what this is? It's a snowball just from outside here. It's very, very cold out. He went on to denounce what he called the hysteria on global warming and then threw the snowball at the presiding officer. James Inhofe, who believes snow in D.C. disproves climate change, is the chairman of the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, because of course he is. He won with 57% of the vote in his last reelection campaign, because of course he did. Senator Mitch McConnell, Republican of Kentucky since 1984, has been urging state officials all across the U.S. to refuse to comply with the new EPA rule on carbon emissions that was championed by the Obama administration. The rule requires existing power plants to cut their carbon emissions by 30% based on the 2005 requirements. by the year 2030. Senator McConnell's having none of it. Think twice, he said, before submitting a state plan which could lock you into federal enforcement and expose you to lawsuits when the administration is standing on shaky legal ground. And when without your support, it won't be able to demonstrate the capacity to carry out such political extremism. Mitch McConnell, as Senate Majority Leader, has the power to keep any bills he dislikes from coming to a vote. Until January of 2017, at least, that means any legislation seeking to address the issue of climate change will never see the light of day. Because McConnell thinks giving attention to the threat of carbon emissions, which is eventually going to kill us all, amounts to political extremism. Because, of course he does. Meanwhile, in Alaska, there is no snow. Wasilla, long the home of the restart of the annual Iditarod race, has lost the privilege because you can't run dog sleds without snow. The race was required to move the restart 300 miles north to Fairbanks, but even that is becoming chancy. The Chena River, where they wanted to hold the restart, because it has, since time out of mind, been locked in reliably thick ice at this time of year, does not have reliable ice anymore. The islands in the Beaufort Sea near Prudhoe Bay are swarming with polar bears because the ice floes they once used to hunt seals are gone. According to locals, this is unprecedented. Sounds pretty warm to me. San Francisco, Sacramento, Las Vegas, Seattle, Salt Lake City, along with more than 20 other cities out west, are experiencing the warmest winters they've ever recorded. Meanwhile, back east, cities like Boston and Buffalo are trying to dig out from one of the most fearsome winters in memory. People in New England and California have been joking about building a pipeline to ship all the frozen water blanketing the east out to the parched west. If they can build a massive Keystone XL funnel from Alberta to the Gulf in order to ship poison to the world, why not build one to ship vital water to people who desperately need it? It's a joke, for now anyway. Our cannibalistic economic model, indifferent news media, sagging voter turnout, general cynicism, religious derangement, and fundamental addiction to a cognitive dissonance that motivates so very many to slap aside stone-carved facts staring them in the face, is going to put this whole human experiment into a shallow, unmarked grave. People talk about destroying the planet, which is a hoot. The planet isn't going anywhere. Even the environment may recover in one form or another. The equation we're busily erasing from the blackboard for profit, while encased in a suffocating bag of ignorance, is ourselves. This is how you die of dumb.
That's all, folks. That's the news, and we are out of here. Good night and good luck, and so it goes. That's the way it is. Stay on the same page. Take it to the next level. At the end of the day, it is what it is. Have a good day. Bring something to the table, and never make direct eye contact with the policeman. The next guest of the evening is Larry Pinkney. Chuck will be getting Larry on the line. Larry will be speaking to us from Minneapolis. Larry is a writer, a radio show host. He is a former Black Panther member. He is a human rights activist.
Hello, Larry Pinkney speaking.
Well, hello, Larry. This is Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachek and the New American Dream Radio Show, and you're on the air.
Hi, Chuck and Mike. It's a pleasure and an honor to be on the air with the New American Dream Radio Show. First and foremost, I'd like to say thank you to the audience. First and foremost, thank you, Chuck, and you, Mike, for all that you are doing. This is a long and protracted struggle. I want to say to everyone right now, please, please get a pen or pencil or piece of paper all of that, or, and all of that, a pen, paper, and a pencil, whatever, to write this down. Okay? Everybody done that? Go get it. Go get it right now. I want everyone to read Cindy Sheehan's new book. All right, it was just released. It's hot off the press just a few days ago. The name of the book, I repeat, the name of the book is The Obama Files. I'm going to repeat it. The Obama Files, Chronicles of an Award-Winning War Criminal. Let me say that again. The Obama Files, Chronicles of an Award-Winning War Criminal. Get the book. It's by Cindy Sheehan. Please, I urge the audience, the listening audience, to get the book and spread the word, because this needs to be put out everywhere. East Coast, West Coast, Midwest, North, South, everywhere. All right? Please, get Cindy Sheehan's latest book. Now, having said that, I hope everybody's written that down. Having said that, let's talk a little bit about why we in the United States, and Cindy deals with this in her book as well, but why we in the United States, be we black, white, brown, red, or yellow, doesn't matter our color or our gender. What matters is, do we have honor or integrity, or I should say, and integrity? It's about we the people, everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people. That's what this struggle is about. It's not about the Democrat and Republican plantation. Let me say that again. It's not about the Democrat and Republican plantation. It's about we the people, okay? So really, stop thinking in terms of blue states, red states. The only state there is the state of humanity and Mother Earth herself. So all of us have got to understand that if we are to make systemic, that is to say, real systemic change, we have got to understand that we, that is to say, we the people, are the modus for change, M-O-D-I-S, the modus for change. Otherwise, there will be no change. We can talk about Democrats, Republicans. That's a game, folks. You know that's a game. Democrats have a good line. The Republicans have their line. All right? But you know what? This is about the people. Everyday, ordinary, black, white, brown, red, and yellow people. And we need to understand that as times are becoming ever more critical, that our obligation to not only ourselves but our posterity is to make it crystal clear that neither one of these parties, which are in fact joined at the hip, neither one of them represent the interests of everyday ordinary people. Neither one of them. All right? One wants to kill you slowly, the other party would like to kill you right away. But the bottom line is, as Brother Malcolm X said, they both want to kill you. All right? And we the people, it is time for us to say no more. We're not going to go for the game. We're not going to allow ourselves to be duped, fooled, bamboozled, as Malcolm X would say, okay, by color, by gender, by any of that nonsense that they bring up. Now, let me say, and let me remind everyone that now that folks are talking about ISIS and Al-Qaeda, the fact of the matter is that the United States government, and I won't say our government, I'm going to say the United States government, because it's not our government. The U.S. government, the White House, the Congress, the judiciary, they don't represent us, and we all know that. It's time to be honest about that. Let's organize locally. Let's always begin locally. We take it nationally, and then we take it internationally. We are going to win this struggle. The people, everyday ordinary people struggle if we understand that we cannot believe or accept the corporate stream media vomit that we get from Fox News, from CNBC, or whatever they call themselves, from ABC, CBS, and the list goes on and on. No, it's not about that. They don't represent us. They're not our media. Come on, people, wake up. Organize in your own communities. Link your organizing activities, both not only locally, but also nationally and internationally. We the people, everyday ordinary people in this country, you know, we are a good people. I'm going to say that again. We are a good people. We're not a bad people. But we are a people who have allowed ourselves to be bamboozled and duped time and time again by our so-called leaders who are not leaders. They are misleaders. I repeat, they are misleaders. So I just want to, I'm not going to go on and on. I just want to say to everyone throughout this nation and around the world, because I'm sure that this is being listened to around the world, that it's time for us to stop shucking and jiving, half-stepping, and it's time for us to really get off the Democrat and Republican plantation. It's time for a new American revolution, all right? It's time for a new American revolution, a real American revolution that, in fact, is inclusive of all of our sisters and brothers, black, white, brown, red, yellow, all of us. And this is not going to be easy. The corporate-controlled media, the vomit stream media, they don't want that to happen. Why? They would rather you look at American Idol or whatever their latest vomit is. You know, that's what they want you to do. Don't do that. Tell your sisters and brothers everywhere, we are the ones with the power. And if we don't use it, we're sure as hell going to lose it. And it's time for us to use it. Say no to this corporate power. Say no. We will not accept this. We the people in the towns, the villages, the hamlets, the cities, wherever we are, we will come together and we will decide what will be the ultimate solutions. I didn't say solution singular. I said solutions, plural, because there are many solutions, and all of us, we the people, we have the answers to that. So I don't want to belabor this. I don't want to go on and on, but I want to just really try to imbue the audience with the power that they already have. But remember, if you don't use it, you're going to lose it. So we're going to use it, all right? We're going to stand up to this corporate-controlled police, militarized police surveillance state, okay? Ask yourself, why are people like Julian Assange of Wikipedia fame, why are they being attacked? Why has Assange been holed up for what, going on 2 years now in the small country's embassy of Ecuador? Why? Why have people had to flee who are demanding that the U.S. government, be it Democrat or Republican, that the U.S. government be transparent and honest with the people? They're not honest with us. They're not about honesty. They are about manufacturing companies.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
And now it's time for the New American Dream masterpiece, classic, Playhouse Theater, something, something. Real voices with a message that you will not hear on the CBS Nightly News. Tonight we hear the voice of Fred Hampton, member of the Black Panther Party, who was gunned down in a raid by members of the Chicago Police Department on December 4th, 1969.
If you're asked to make a commitment at the age of 20, and you say, I don't want to make a commitment, only because of the simple reason that I'm too young to die, I want to live a little bit longer. What you did is, you're dead already. You have to understand that people have to pay the price for peace. If you dare to struggle, you dare to win. If you dare not struggle, then God damn it, you don't deserve to win. Let me say peace to you if you're willing to fight for it. And I believe that I'm going to do my job. I believe that I was born not to die in a car wreck. I don't believe I'm going to die from slipping on a piece of ice. I don't believe I'm going to die because I have a heart. I don't believe I'm going to die of lung cancer. I think I'm going to be able to die doing the things I was born for. I believe I will be able to die as a revolutionary. Why don't you love the people? Why don't you struggle for the people? Why don't you die for the people? The New American Dream, masterpiece, classic, Playhouse Theater, something, something. Real voices with a message that you will not hear on the CBS Nightly News. And now a message from the United Tribes, from the Algonquin to the Seminole, to the Cherokee, to the Lakota, to the Apache. Americans, air quotes. Your time is up. Look what you have done. You are a disaster, the biggest there's ever been. Climate change, massacres, fascism, poverty, the whole manifest destiny westward expansion, you're always getting better, load of crap. Just keep it on moving. Right down the Golden Gate Bridge into the Pacific Ocean and just go away. And will the last American idiot to leave please turn out the lights? Please exit through the gift shop.
The national threat level is now at code camo. This is elevated from the blaze orange threat level right before the 2004 hoax election of George Bush, when the leader of the FBI and DHS went on TV to tell us about the elevated threat level, and they were, of course, not lying about anything, about 9/11 or anthrax or WMD or Bush being the real president, none of that. And then President Barack Obama did not lie about hope and change or about closing the torture chambers or about burying Osama bin Laden at sea. And now he can drone, airplane, kill anyone he wants, and it's okay, it's all good. And the things at Sandy Hook in Boston that looked like it was all more big government lies, and they are really actually going to try to take away the guns from the people, and there really are prison camps in the country that are not myths or made up. Well, the threat level is at code camo, and there is a light in the church steeple, and Paul Revere is saddling his horse once again. One if by land, two if by sea, and I standing at my front door with a frying pan and a baseball bat shall be. And now a message in a Boone's Farm bottle, some notes we have during the first half of our show from listeners by email, chat room, telephone, telepathy, and telegraph. Inga from Baraboo sends this. Happy anniversary, Mom and Dad. Already missing you. Wish you were here. We're lost. We're kidding. Hugs, hugs, kisses, kisses. Jim from Jacksonville. Just want to send a shout out to all the guys back in the dorm and just say this. Ignored reality is going to wipe out the human race. To inform people is hard slugging. Everything is lined up against the public being informed, or the policymakers for that matter. News is contaminated by its service to special interests and hidden agendas. Many scientists or their employers are dependent on federal money. Even psychologists and anthropologists were roped into the government's torture and occupation programs. Economists tell lies for corporation and Wall Street. Plant and soil scientists tell lies for agribusiness and Monsanto. Truth tellers are slandered and persecuted. However, persistence can eventually win out. In the long run, truth sometimes emerges, but not always, and not always in time. Elaine from Crookston says, go Timberwolves. And she says, can I just say this quickly about our invisible revolution? Did you ever ask yourself how it happens that government and capitalism continue to exist in spite of all the evil and trouble they are causing in the world? If you did, then your answer must have been that it is because the people support those institutions and that they support them because they believe in them. As long as most citizens believe in the ideas that justify global capitalism, the private and state institutions that serve our corporate masters are unassailable. When these ideas are shattered, the institutions that buttress the ruling class deflate and collapse. The battle of ideas is percolating below the surface. It is a battle the corporate state is steadily losing. An increasing number of Americans are getting it. They know that we have been stripped of political power. They recognize that we have been shorn of our most basic and cherished civil liberties and live under the gaze of the most intrusive security and surveillance apparatus in human history. Half the country lives in poverty. Many of the rest of us, if the corporate state is not overthrown, will join them. These truths are no longer hidden. It appears that political ferment is dormant in the United States. This is incorrect. The ideas that sustain the corporate state are swiftly losing their efficacy across the political spectrum. The ideas that are rising to take their place, however, are inchoate. The right has retreated into Christian fascism and a celebration of the gun culture. The left, knocked off balance by decades of fierce state repression in the name of anti-communism, is struggling to rebuild and define itself. Popular revulsion for the ruling elite, however, is nearly universal. It is a question of which ideas will capture the public's imagination. Revolution usually erupts over events that would, in normal circumstances, be considered meaningless or minor acts of injustice by the state. But once the tinder of revolt has piled up, as it has in the U.S., an insignificant spark easily ignites popular rebellion. A person or movement can ignite this tinder. No one knows where or when the eruption will take place. No one knows the form it will take, but it is certain now that a popular revolt is coming. The refusal by the corporate state to address even the minimal grievances of the citizenry, along with the abject failure to remedy the mounting state repression, the chronic unemployment and underemployment, the massive debt peonage that is crippling more than half of Americans, and the loss of hope and widespread despair means that blowback is inevitable. Because revolution is evolution at its boiling point, you cannot make a real revolution any more than you can hasten the boiling of a tea kettle, Berkman wrote. It is the fire underneath that makes it boil. How quickly it will come to the boiling point will depend on how strong the fire is. Revolutions, when they erupt, appear to the elites and the establishment to be sudden and unexpected. This is because the real work of revolutionary ferment and consciousness is unseen by the mainstream society, noticed only after it has largely been completed. Once ideas shift for a large portion of a population, once the vision of a new society grips the popular imagination, the old regime is finished. By the time ruling elites are openly defied, there has already been a nearly total loss of faith in the ideas, in our case, free market capitalism and globalization, that sustain the structure structures of the ruling elites. And once enough people get it, a process that can take years, the slow, quiet, and peaceful social evolution becomes quick, militant, and violent. As Berkman wrote, evolution becomes revolution. This is where we are headed.
This note from Kareem from Santa Barbara. Hey, everybody, look at me. I'm on the radio. In December 2012, a pink-haired complex systems researcher named Brad Warner made his way through the throng of 24 space scientists at the fall meeting of the American Geophysical Union, held annually in San Francisco. It was titled, Is Earth Effed? Full title, Is Earth Effed? Dynamical Futility of Global Environmental Management and Possibilities for Sustainability via Direct Action Activism. Standing at the front of the conference, the geophysicist from the University of California, San Diego, walked the crowd through the advanced computer model he was using to answer that question. He talked about system boundaries, perturbations, dissipation, attractors, bifurcations, and a whole bunch of other stuff largely incomprehensible to those of us uninitiated in complex systems theory. But the bottom line was clear enough. Global capitalism has made the depletion of resources so rapid, convenient, and barrier-free that Earth-human systems are becoming dangerously unstable in response. When pressed by a journalist for a clear answer on the are we effed question, Werner set the jargon aside and replied, yeah, more or less. There was one dynamic in the model, however, that offered some hope. Werner termed it resistance. Movements of people or groups of people who adopt a certain set of dynamics that does not fit within the capitalist culture. According to the abstract for his presentation, this includes environmental direct action, resistance taken from outside the dominant culture, as in protests, blockades, and sabotage by indigenous peoples, workers, anarchists, and other anarchist groups. Serious scientific gatherings don't usually feature calls for mass political resistance, much less direct action and sabotage. Then again, Werner wasn't exactly calling for those things. He was merely observing that mass uprisings of people along the lines of the abolition movement, the civil rights movement, or Occupy Wall Street represent the likeliest source of friction to slow down an economic machine that is careening out of control. We know that past social movements have had tremendous influence on how the dominant culture evolved, he pointed out. So it stands to reason that if we're thinking about the future of the Earth and the future of our coupling to the environment, we have to include resistance as part of that dynamic. And that, Werner argued, is not a matter of opinion, but really a geophysics problem.
Patty in Donegal, Nebraska, sends along this note about Irish-American writer Jimmy Breslin. Breslin recalls many of the people and places of the old Queens tenderly, but he doesn't exactly miss it. When he returns to the parochial school in Richmond Hill, where he was educated and finds that many of its students and many neighborhood residents are now Sikh immigrants, he seems positively delighted. I thought they were great, he tells me. I didn't know anything about their religion, but they told me that they believe men and women are equal. People of all faiths are equal. In other words, whatever their issues and problems may be, at least they're not the same old sour Irish Catholics. You can blame the church's condition on the Irish, who gave us total religious insanity, Breslin writes. They are a race that sat in the rain for a couple of thousand years and promoted the most crazed beliefs in personal living outside of the hillbillies. Of course, those are deliberately outrageous statements, and they don't reflect the most nuanced understanding of Irish history. But I defy any Irish or Irish-American person to read them and not laugh the bitter laughter of recognition. Breslin is right that the Irish who came to America were the poorest of the dirt poor, the wariest of a wary race, the likeliest to follow orders, ask no questions, and do whatever was necessary to get along. While Ireland itself has blossomed in the last generation, Irish Americans as a whole remain a conservative, conformist group, a race of insurance salesmen, accountants, and sentimental drunks. You couldn't have the religion they were running unless you had a lot of impoverished peasants to follow you, Breslin says. Peasants who do what they're told. The church hierarchy may believe it has a new generation of peasants to dominate. Immigrants from Latin America, Africa, and the Philippines now form the bedrock of the American church. But there is clearly a problem. The hierarchy and the priesthood are still overwhelmingly composed of aging Irish Americans, and the supply of young men willing to take a vow of chastity to enter a dubious profession whose prestige is shattered has evaporated. Breslin remembers being at a church luncheon a few years ago when the late Cardinal John O'Connor, then the New York bishop, offered to personally drive any interested young man to the seminary. There were, I think, 7 men training for the priesthood in the New York Archdiocese at that time, Breslin says. It's a lifestyle that has been demolished by the steady change in the pages of the calendar. You can't ask young people today to lead such a cold, restricted life. There was an era when a mother with 4 children in Queens proudly sent one of the sons off to become a priest. It was like becoming a congressman or senator, a tremendous thing. The family was proud and the kid was proud. He wasn't in there to hide from sex. He was in forward motion. He was doing something. Now that's gone. We don't get that anymore. Breslin dares to imagine a renewed and liberated vision of the Catholic faith. His faith and the Roman Catholic Church as it now exists, he writes, are different things, separate and unequal. He imagines people holding masses in their homes around the kitchen table, leaving the priesthood and the hierarchy behind. He imagines Catholics who cast off the church's wealth and grandeur, following the example of a certain Jewish carpenter who wore cast-off clothes, slept rough, and threw the money changers out of the temple. He imagines a new church in which the priesthood is open to men and women, married or single, gay or straight. He imagines himself ending his career as a priest or bishop in this new church. My wife, she's Jewish, but forget the religion for a minute. If we were at a parish, we'd get housing, he says. And it's good brick housing, usually. I would do the sermon. She's a politician. She could do the social work wonderfully. It would be a good, productive life, one you could be proud of and enjoy. It's a wistful, genial image, the aging but unquenchable newspaperman turned priest with a Jewish wife, ensconced in the good brick housing and noble social work of a modest Queens parish. But Jimmy Breslin knows the Catholic Church will not be redeemed in this way, not in his lifetime or mine. His housing will continue to be a Manhattan high-rise, and his sermons will appear 3 times a week in the pages of Newsday. He pauses, and you can see the sadness of a man who has left the church of his fathers behind late in life. Could the current Catholic hierarchy do anything, I ask, to get it back? He shrugs. They can go. Just go.
A message in a Boone's Farm bottle. Some notes we've been receiving during the first half of our show from listeners by email, chat room, telephone, telepathy, and telegraph.
Well, it's been another long week in Duluth, Minnesota, my hometown at the end of the empire. Duluth is big burritos and apricot wheat beer and a parade to celebrate cold weather. Duluth can be murder. It's the big woods, big tradition, big old buildings like an old sailor headed back to his boat at 4 in the morning, stumbling, never falling. It's the sauna and the secrets of the North Woods. It's schools on top of bars, on top of bait shops, and it's adventure. And it's being able to be yourself. But Duluth can be murder. It's the trains, the taconite, guns, tattoos, bowling, brawls, Bigfoot and ball games. It's laser tag. It's the bomb. It's the gold. We continue our story, fast-forwarding past the recent news of a surfer on Lake Superior having somehow disappeared as we meet the ship captain, Jimmy, fireman, hunter, the Indian chief, the businessman, Air Force captain, prison guard, as they meet for their daily ritual, solving the world's problems, sitting naked, dripping sweat on a solid oak bench in the sauna.
The businessman knew just what to do. He poured the special sauce into the water and dashed the water on the rocks. Steam hissed up and everyone went silent as the guilty, bowing their heads and sucking down the last bit of usable air. The eucalyptus smell feeling filled the capsule like innocent invisible gas. Nothing could taste so sweet. Smuggled essence. Glass vials were verboten. Danger of breaking and cutting feet to ribbons. They're swinging meat in those trucks, someone said. Jimmy didn't recognize the voice, and he didn't care. He rested his head on the wall and let his eyes close, saving the moment, the heat, the smell, the memory. It's an ice cream truck, said someone new. Swinging meat. Human meat. You do not want to go there, bro, said the prison guard. Juan's from Mexico. Jimmy pulled his feet and legs in tight to his chest and closed his eyes. He felt the steam roll over him, a foggy heating blanket on full power. He wondered if he could take it. He stayed and cupped his hand over his mouth to breathe and put up his other hand to save one ear. The fireman began an old saw about the trapped miners. Everyone knew that there were trapped miners, have been for years, maybe always will be. Some doubted they even existed, like moon rocks. Why don't they get them out, said the fireman. Jimmy tested the air and found it was safe to breathe again. The sauna was crowded today, as always at this time. Jimmy saw them almost every day, their saggy, flabby bodies, most with still a fire in their eyes, a mischievous glint, an interest in the world burning, smoke showing from the chimney on a cold winter night that proved the wood stove still worked. The Indian chief commanded his corner post, with his long headdress running down his back and then up again between his legs. They sat in silence, dripping like laundry in the basement. And everybody has almost always already heard about anything anyone wants to try to bring up as hot news. The fireman wore his big yellow helmet, chin strapped down. The Air Force captain, his leather jacket. The prison guard sported an iron waist chain with handcuffs attached. The fireman and prison guard got into it again over Pike Place Plaza and using old schools as internment camps, and everyone just kind of went to their happy place. The rest of the spaces were filled in by more war veterans, Vietnam, Korea, Iraq, all with medals stuck into their skin. The kids today, said the ship captain. And everyone opened their eyes again and turned their heads slightly to him to nod or say, yeah. And for a while they would talk about how things were not as they were in the old days. And then someone would sigh, yeah. Sometimes they talked about sex. And Jimmy would hope it wouldn't last too long. To have to see these guys naked was a limit. Some of them were loud. Some were listeners. Some didn't talk at all. But nobody argued much about whatever. Lately, the talk had been about the door that would not close. Sometimes they just sat there and enjoyed the heat, the sweat dripping off their bodies onto the wood, onto the cement, onto their feet. The fireman told a joke about a one-legged woman on a flagpole. And Jimmy closed his eyes and put his head back against the awesome, smooth vanilla wood, followed by 3 sweet seconds of silence. We got a surfer missing. Yep.
That's the news from Duluth, Minnesota, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats and journalists are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average.
The new American dream means never having to say some question or idea is not valid. We're allowed to ask any questions that we have. There are no wrong questions. There's no hidden black military budget. There's no UFO file that Americans cannot see. No JFK documents that will not be opened during our lifetime. No destroyed RFK murder photos by the LA police. No evidence from Ground Zero taken away before we can even look at it. We are not the USSR of the 1960s. This is supposed to be America. That is our dream, to become America, the new America, the real hope of the world. We have a dream of bringing the United States politicians, journalists, and generals who brought about this long 12-year war and debacle to trial and put on TV, just like O.J., every afternoon so every American can watch, just like the McCarthy hearings and this JFK funeral procession. What we need is a new American dream, not of new homes and toasters and microwaves, but of becoming the type of country we always thought we were. Right now, we live on lies. We subsist on lies. But it's not really living. We thank you for joining us tonight for the New American Dream Radio Show. We hope you'll be back next week and every week as we stream live to you on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
And thanks to our guests, Phil Ferruccio, Larry Pinkney, M.K. Davis, and Anthony Reason. Also credit to Joe Badgen, John Chuckman, and William Rivers Pitt. To get the archives of this show from February 2011, go to theshow.newamericandream.info. And as always, we apologize for our mistakes and plan to make fewer mistakes next week. To contact the show, either Chuck or me or any of our guests, write to me at nwestiowa@gmail.com. And good night to my friends, Chuck from Lorraine. Stay warm down there. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Daniel Lewin. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Emily Parker. Good night, Ben Wheeler. Good night, Krista Campbell. Good night, Nancy Lanza. Good night, James Foley and Stephen Salop. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.